Here on a Wednesday afternoon, Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell, and Bruce Pratt here for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101 as we continue to salute those publishers who have been so supportive of the Sports Lit segment for 8+ years. Hard to believe.
Yeah. One of those presses and people who came on early was Mona Hamlin, who used to be the person at Syracuse. She recently retired, but we have new people taking over. And I can remember she said to me, well, they really like to have the books sent to a radio station and not to the people's homes. And I said, well, that's okay. You could send it to me or Rich. I said, but the problem is if you send it to the radio station, there are people that sometimes send our ownership books and it could get lost in the shuffle. And when I explained who that was, she said, okay, we got that all taken care of. And so it's interesting. Nebraska covers probably the broadest spectrum of sports of all of the presses, but they all give us books that range from fiction to nonfiction to books that are very scholarly and books that are not intended to be scholarly but are still of that same quality. So I chose 10 from each to just remind people about rather than try and go over all of them. So let's start with Syracuse. One of the books we got from them I loved was The War of the Wheels, H.G. Wells and the Bicycle. We learned about how H.G. Wells used it in film and how its role was there in film. I don't think Wells rode a lot of bicycles. They would probably have needed to be very sturdy ones. But it came to us about the same time that we got First Taste of Freedom, A Cultural History of Bicycle Marketing in the United States, which led to us investigating through Nebraska and through other publishers, lots of books about cycling. What was fascinating about this book was that bicycles started out to be marketed only to the elite, only the people that had real money and adventurers, and the people who rode bicycles were generally gentlemen and the like, and we know about George B. Thayer, which we talked about last week. But then once bicycles became more, not only more easily built and were safer, you know, they were faster than taking the train from station to station in those days. They were faster than riding horses. So the bicycle became more of a work vehicle. And when it became a work vehicle, it became more of a lower class vehicle. And so more and more upper-class people abandoned biking, but biking became more and more popular. It also was seen as a way, much the way that hockey would be the case in say, post-World War II Canada. In the 20s and 30s, if you were a cyclist, or a wheelman, as they called them, you were moving into a certain echelon which identified you as being particularly American. It was a particularly American thing to do. And so that book by Robert Turpin, First Taste of Freedom, Cultural History of Bicycle Marketing in the United States, really opened a lot of eyes. It did how Mark Twain was a huge advocate of the bicycle and others. Now, a book we haven't talked about yet, but we will probably in February, Horse Racing the Chicago Way, Gambling, Politics, and Organized Crime, 1837 to 1911, is a book I've just scanned because I do that before I read them. I think this is going to prove to be really interesting, and I never associate Chicago with horse racing. Bootlegging, meat packing, Midwestern commerce, but I never thought of it as with horse racing. Then two books with an author, Charles Kastner, we've spoken to a couple of times. One was the 1929 Bunyan Derby, Johnny Sallow and the Great Foot Race Across America. The follow-up to that was Race Across America, Eddie Gardner, and the Great Bunyan Derbies.
Fascinating story.
Yeah.
My word. I knew nothing about that.
I had never heard of it. And the funny thing was I talked to everybody I knew from the track community from when I was coaching. None of them knew about this. Dave Jeffrey didn't know about this. Mary Cady didn't know about this. Ron White didn't know about this. So they were races where people ran across the United States basically every day, averaging 45 miles a day. And Johnny Sallow won the first one. He went back to his home in New Jersey expecting to be a hero's welcome and to be named to the police department and didn't go too well. And then he was working security at a baseball game and was hit in the head by a ball and died. Eddie Gardner, was from the Pacific Northwest, and he was African American, and he was a champion runner. He was in the other Bunyan Derby in 1928, and when he ran through segregated parts of the South, they kept trying to run him off the road. Yeah. They didn't want to let him win a stage of the race. These are fascinating books, and they're so well told. Both of them are really good. Again, that's Charles Kastner. And that's with Syracuse Press, Race Across America, Eddie Gardner, the Great Bunyan Derbies, and the 1929 Bunyan Derby. Then we had a book that I'd forgotten about, only because we've talked so much about the post-Civil War muscular Christianity period in America, where they were feeling that American men were effeminate and soft because they weren't going to war. So training, physical training became a big deal, and it carried right on through World War II with baseball teams down in Florida at spring training having drill training and the like. This idea that if we didn't have a fit population, that we would be wiped out if we ever had to go into combat. Fit for America is further titled Major John L. Griffith and the Quest for Athletics and Fitness by Matthew Lindemann. It's a fascinating look at trying to incorporate into American male life this notion that there's you have this sort of God-given duty, or God requires this duty of you to keep your body strong and fit so that you can keep America, America. There were a lot of wonderful things that came out of that movement in terms of it began the rise of women's sports. There were a lot of bad stuff too, and it's a really good book. Then we had Rita Liberty and Maureen M. Smith on to talk about one of my favorite books we've ever had.
That was so good.
Representing Wilma Rudolph, who was one of my sports heroes when I was a kid. I loved watching that woman run, and you know, people know I have a great affinity for track, but it really describing, you know, not only the fact that she had to come back from serious illness to become a great runner, but the fact that black women at that time were told they had to dress a certain way, they couldn't have natural hair, they had to present themselves in a certain way if they were going to be Olympians and the like, and they were often passed over for white athletes with inferior performances. It was a really fine book, representing Wilma Rudolph. Invisible Seasons, Title IX and the Fight for Equity in College Sports by Kelly Belanger was, again, an eye-opener. I mean, I thought of myself as someone that was pretty familiar with how all that worked, but she really got down into it. Then a book which led to a relationship the show now has, Sports Business Unplugged, Leadership Challenges from the World of Sports by Rick Barton and Norman O'Reilly, used a lot of their columns from Business Sports Journal. Norman O'Reilly now is the dean of the Graduate School of Business for the University of Maine down in Portland, and is I shake my head and scratch my head and wonder how we were able to attract someone of that caliber. But it's a really good book because it looks at leadership, and not the way we tend to look at it in that military sense, but in other ways. Then a book which we had an interesting visit with the author. It's called The Rise of American High School Sports and the Search for Control, 1880 to 1930. When we think of how regulated high school sports are today, there was a time when high school sports boiled down to the kids got together, they each threw in a dime so they could use the field or get a ball, and they played games with virtually no adult supervision whatsoever, and how over time the schools started to take control of that, and now high school sports is probably the most regulated of all. The last book from Syracuse I'm going to talk about is a book I love, Dolph Shays and the Rise of Professional Basketball. Again, I mean, I knew who Dolph Shays was. I knew he was an early a professional basketball player. He came from New York at a time when New York was the epicenter of the basketball world. Didn't know some of the things that he had to overcome. I didn't understand some of the many impediments to professional basketball getting started, mostly because people thought it would be run by Jewish and Irish gangsters, that the professional sports were looked down upon. And, you know, guys like Dolph Shays were sitting there saying, yeah, but I want to keep playing. Really, really good book, Dolph Shays and the Rise of Professional Basketball. Now, our relationship with the University of Illinois Press began with a book called Bloomer Girls.
Ah, that was so good.
Women Baseball Pioneers by Deborah A. Shattuck. And it was next to probably Dust Bowl Girls, one of my favorite books we had. It was a really well done book, and it talked about the history of women playing baseball way back when before things were really organized. Then another book we've talked about twice because it was a new edition, friend of the show, Dick Kropos, NFL Football, A History of America's Newest National Pastime. And the outgrowth of that book in many ways have been more and more tremendously insightful columns in Arte by Dick. If you really think you understood how football came about, and like as we talked about with Jerry Eisenberg's book on Roselle, this was a great companion piece to those. Pigskin Nation, How the NFL Remade American Politics by Jesse Barrett was also very good. We've talked about how cultural politics and football have become entwined in a way which may not be the healthiest thing that ever happened to the United States. Yeah. A book I loved, The Sport Marriage, Women Who Make It Work by Stephen M. Ortiz. When I saw the title, I thought, really, is there enough to write a book about this? It was great. His interviews with so many professional athletes and their wives and how difficult it can be, not for just all the things that we know about how athletes, you know, attract a certain kind of following sometimes, but how difficult it is to be the wife who's there when you come home from losing the Super Bowl. And the amount of time spent away and raising children for long periods of time by yourself. It's a really, really good book. Again, that's called The Sport Marriage, Women Who Make It Work. The Gold in the Rings, The People and Events That Transform the Olympic Games by Stephen Wynn and Robert K. Barney was really good. It crossed over with books we have from other publishers about the 1968 Olympics, about early Olympics where athletes were banned because of color or gender, and then moments in Olympic history where it was really changed. Passing the Baton, Black Women Track Stars and American Identity by Kate M. Ariel was really a good book. I had no idea how difficult it had been for the first African-American runners to get a chance to compete internationally for the country. And it's a fascinating book. I mean, I knew a little bit, but I didn't know a lot. The Rise and Fall of Olympic Amateurism by Matthew Llewellyn and John Gleaves was really fascinating, too. You know, especially when we never know whether the NHL is going to send their players now or not, and are they going to bring back baseball? If they do, a professional is going to be able to play. And the role that people like A.V. Brundage and some other, well, frankly, reprehensible human beings had to do with that. Then, friend of the show, Travis Vogan, still one of my favorite books we've had, ESPN, The Making of a Sports Media Empire. I mean, a guy who really went to find out, you know, back in the days of the tractor pulls. Back when I can remember, you drove by ESPN, it was like two buildings in Bristol, Connecticut, which was right down the road from where I live. And then two more, Tennis, A History from American Amateurs to Global Professionals. I really liked what Greg Ruth's book did because it made me understand the whole open era and everything better because it wasn't about individuals. We learned a lot about the Williams sisters in a book. We certainly learned a tremendous amount about Arthur Ashe and Ray Arsenault's book. But this was a guide that really let me understand that better. And then finally, a book we talked about not that long ago, Surf and Rescue, George Freeth and the Birth of California Culture.
That was so good.
That was so good and so fascinating. And so much of what we think of when we think of California and the surf world and the like and the great swimming traditions of California, man, if you really knew how much of that was born in Hawaii and it was how much it was George Freeth and Duke Kahanamoku. Really good. But what we'll do is I'll get all these books. I'll get a list. We'll get them up on the Facebook page or on the website, whichever, so people can look at them. And then probably in 2 weeks, I'll make my gift list, my top 10 gift list for books. And if we got a quick second, I just want to mention on Saturday, December 10th from 11 to 5, at the U Universalist Church on Park Street, the Downtown Bangor Book Festival, Maine Authors Book Fair, will be held. I'll be there. There'll be about 20 other writers there. Everybody will have books. The The guys from the folks from Gibran will be there from the Briar Patch. There'll be lots of other people. You can find out about this by just going to the Facebook, going to ChristopherPackard.com. That's all one word, ChristopherPackard.com. You can find all the information on that. And or you can contact me through the University of Maine website, University of Maine English Department website, and I'll be happy to send you on the details.
Excellent. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure.
Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday, right here. Oh, you're enjoying Bleeding Green?
I'm loving Bleeding Green. I'm reliving moments of my life as a Whalers, as someone who lived near Hartford and loved the Whalers. It's a really good book.